Well, welcome to a special edition of the TDN Writers Room, and special indeed because this is the first ever podcast that devotes time to a Triple Crown race run at Saratoga. Yes, you know by now that the Belmont Stakes on Saturday will be run at a mile and a quarter at Saratoga as they're rebuilding Belmont Park. So we've got a lot to talk about as we go through the races on this Saturday, and we've got a lot of things to go over in relatively short period of time, so I'll try to get it done. My name's Bill Finley, by the way, and I'm a correspondent for the Thoroughbred Daily News.
Hi, y'all. Randy Moss, NBC Sports, Buyer Speed Figure Group.
I never knew you were with NBC. You're just wearing the hat, Randy. It's looking really good on you. Like, it's ode to NBC Sports. I'm Zoe Cadman with First Racing, and I am sporting my Golden Gate Field sweatshirt. I will finally be able to meet Mr. Bill Finley in person this coming Sunday, as we'll all be up there to celebrate closing day of Golden Gate Field. I'm pretty sure there won't be a dry eye in the house.
Yeah, I don't think celebrate is the right word, but maybe commiserate the closing of Golden Gate Field.
We're going to look back at some good times.
Okay, well, that's a good attitude for that. All right, guys, just like we did for the Kentucky Derby, let's go down the whole field here in the Belmont. Give us your opinions on the horse, whether you think they have a good chance, don't have a good chance, and we'll just go in post position order. I'll start it off with Seize the Gray. He came into the Preakness as a kind of unknown, improved 12 buyer points from his second best race. He also had an absolutely perfect trip that day. For all those reasons, I'm going to have to take a pass on him. He improved 12 buyer points, got a perfect trip. He could get a good trip again this time alone on the lead, or perhaps, you know, close up on the inside. But, you know, we all love Coach Wayne Lucas. It's been a nice story, but I think he had his 15 minutes of fame in the Preakness.
All right. Well, I'll go next. Seize the Gray. I'm going to take a pass as well. Although, all eyes at Saratoga and everywhere else have said this horse has been training really, really well. I just think he's in the moment right now, that horse. And some horses, when they're about to just tip over the edge, apparently can fool you just a little bit with the way they're training. So I'm going to take a pass on him. I'm rooting for D. Wayne, but he's for sure going to be a send from the rail. And I think there's going to be a lot of speed in there.
Wayne's easy to root for, but it's actually Wayne that has time and time again mentioned that the very best horses in the barn are the ones that fool you the most. To quote Wayne specifically, the best horses always greet you at the front of the stall in the morning. So you don't really know until they get to the quarter pole, basically, how much gas is left in the tank. Here's the rabbit hole I'm going to go down here. Since Fleet Alex won those remarkable Preakness and the Belmont back-to-back, right? Since 2005, there have been 44 horses that ran in the Preakness Stakes and then came back to run in the Belmont Stakes. Forget about the Kentucky Derby for right now. Let's just focus on Preakness Belmont, okay? And let's exclude for a second the two Triple Crown winners, American Pharoah and Justify. So now you're down, to 42 horses that have run in the Preakness and the Belmont. Of those 42, 38 or 90% had a worse finish position in the Belmont than they did in the Preakness. That's an astounding statistic. I wish it wasn't so, but it sort of points as to why today's modern trainers are reluctant to come back in 3 weeks or come back in 2 weeks from the Kentucky Derby and the Preakness. You know, there is tangible data to show that that is not working. And so that's why, the main reason why, I'm going to toss Seize the Gray. And when we get to Mystic Dan, I'm going to toss him as well.
That's pretty good rabbit hole stuff, wouldn't you say, Zoe?
Brought to you by Dude Wipes.
By the way, okay, I have to go here. Randy said he found some Dude Wipes at a luncheon you were at or something like that.
No, that wasn't me. That was Anthony.
Anthony, that's right. Oh, our producer found some dude wipes. So, we got to get him to sponsor the podcast.
For his face, he said they were great. They make him feel face. We'll just put that right in there.
Okay. All right. Moving on from dude wipes to resilience, who's number two in the post position order, trained by Bill Mott. Even Mott himself has raised some questions about whether or not this horse wants to go a mile and a quarter. He beat a weak field in the Wood Memorial, then was sixth in the Derby. He made a big move and kind of flattened out. A matter of fact, at one point, Larry Colmus called him in front in mid stretch. But he just really ran in the final 16th of a mile. Like he just had had it. And also it's so easy to pick on the Wood Memorial, but you know, Wood Memorial just is not producing top contenders by and large for the Triple Crown races. So because of those few factors, he's not going to be on my tickets.
Oh, my reasoning exactly. In the Risen Star, when he was fourth behind Sierra Leone, in that race, he weakened the last part of the race. When he won the Wood, even as he was drawing off, he was starting to drift out a little bit. And then in the Kentucky Derby, he makes that big run, gets up almost level with the leaders at the top of the stretch. He runs his last eighth of a mile in 14 seconds flat. I mean, I do not think the horse really wants to go a mile and a quarter. All respect in the world to Bill Mott, and I think the horse has plenty of talent. But I don't think a mile and a quarter is going to be one of his best future distances.
He's been training very well at Saratoga. If you're looking at just works alone, you might pick him. I'm not sure he's good enough, even at a mile and a quarter, to be perfectly honest.
Number three is the Derby winner. That is, of course, Mystic Dan. He comes back after running a good second in the Preakness, trained by none other than Ken McPeak. He was not the best horse in the Derby. And I think a lot of people would agree that either Forever Young or Sierra Leone was the better horse, but they had that bumping going wide. But he got the job done. You can't take it away from him. In the Preakness, he had no real excuse. He ran second best. He's not a superstar, but what he's a horse that shows up every time. If you're playing exactas, trifectas, superfectas, whatever, he's going to be in the top two or three. Will he win? Maybe. He would be my second pick in the race, but I think he's more likely to run, you know, a good second or third. He, even though he's the Derby winner, I don't think he's the best three-year-old, Randy.
No, I don't either. Look, yes, he needed every bit of the trip that he got in the Kentucky Derby to win. And as we talked about after the Derby, in a certain sense, he made some of his own luck. But then he comes back in the Preakness and he didn't, on a 2-week break, he didn't show quite the same turn of foot that he had in the Kentucky Derby when he opened up on the field at the top of the stretch and opened up two or three lengths at the 3/16 bowl. He didn't really show that in the Preakness. As a matter of fact, he got to within a length of Seize the Gray at the top of the stretch, and Seize the Gray actually was opening up on him a little bit in the final quarter of a mile. Now he's got to come back 3 weeks later to run in the Belmont Stakes. Look, I'm not going to play Mystic Dan first or second. I put him in third in the bottom of tries and in the bottom of supers, but for the same reasons as Seize the Gray, I just think horses are up against it when they're coming back in 3 weeks from the Preakness, much less running all three of the Triple Crown events, the first horse since War of Will in 2019.
He's a scrappy little bugger. I will give him that much. I'd love to know his weights pre-Derby, pre-Preakness, pre-Belmont, to be perfectly honest, because I was there for the Preakness and I thought he looked a little bit light coming off the Derby. And, you know, he ran well. He ran better than I thought he would. I saw him in a video getting off the van going into Saratoga, and he looked a little bit lighter still again. I will, however, say this much. We're going to show his work on XBTV a little bit later on. The work was good. And that is partly due to his constitution. He is a scrappy little bugger. I'm going to use him underneath somewhere. See the winner of this race? I don't think so, but he really is like one of those Cajun little fighters. Like he'll be there. I don't think he's going to be on top, but he might be third or fourth. He'll be right there somewhere.
All right, let's find out what we think about number four, the Wine Steward, a New York bred, coming off second place finishes in the Peter Pan in Lexington, two grade three races. That's what he is. He's a grade three horse. I wish I had him in my barn. He's earned $467,000, but there's nothing about him in his past performances that shows you he belongs in grade one company or that he is the equal of the four or five best three-year-olds in the country. A lot like Mystic Dan, though, he does try six lifetime starts, three seconds, three thirds, but trainer Mike Maker have immense respect for him. But and I can see understand why they're running in this race, but just think he's going to be class-wise in a little bit over his head.
Ditto.
And when you look at his race in the Peter Pan against Antiquarian, the winner, the Wine Steward was second. The Wine Steward actually had a better trip in that race than Antiquarian did. He was two wide around both turns. Antiquarian was three wide. Antiquarian was also bumped around at the start a little bit with Deterministic early on. Look, the Wine Steward, I think the distance is not going to be a problem. He's by Vino Rosso out of a honor and serve mare, a two honor and serve. But I just don't think he's quite good enough.
All right, let's go now to Antiquarian, who beat the Wine Steward in the Peter Pan. This, again, I would say some of the same things about this horse that I said about the Wine Steward, even though he beat him in the Peter Pan. He hasn't shown that he can do it against Top Flight Company, and I'm very down on the Peter Pan horses. I'm going to throw out every single one of them. There's a bunch coming into this race, including Antiquarian. It was not a good race. For the level that you would expect. It wasn't like last year where the Belmont Stakes winner came out of the Peter Pan in Jenna Antonucci's colt. He's just an okay horse. Him and the Wine Steward will be fighting it out for fifth and sixth.
Yeah, I don't think he's as good as last year's Peter Pan winner, definitely. But he did win despite a three wide trip around the turns. I like the way he finished. And if the 12-1 program line turns out to be accurate, I will put him at the bottom of some tries and supers, but not in the first two spots.
I mean, he's got two things really in his favor here. Johnny V and Todd Pletcher, who have been very successful in the Belmont Stakes. Yes, asterisk, that was at a mile and a half at Belmont, but these guys know how to win the Belmont Stakes.
All right, we move on now to number six, Dornock, a horse that beat Sierra Leone back in the Remsen last year. It looks like his form has gone off. He won the Fountain of Youth, but that was a ridiculously easy race with all those scratches. And he's really not competitive in the Bluegrass. And then he's 10th in the Derby. Yeah, he got a little bit of a tough trip, had some problems here and there. But I think that this is a horse that's just not going in the right direction. And it looks like he would really have to wake up. And even if he runs his very best, I'm not sure he's good enough. And he is going to have to really wake up after two kind of blah races. Again, I know he had some trouble in the Derby, but not enough trouble to, put a line through that race or say, you can just look past it. Full brother to Mage. He's a good horse, but I just don't think the Belmont will be his day.
Since he won the Remsen as a two-year-old and beat Sierra Leone with the perceived rail bias, every start since then has gotten progressively worse. He won the Fountain of Youth, but he didn't look good, and the competition that he beat was not up to standard. Then they decided they were going to take him back in the Bluegrass. That didn't work well. Then trainer Danny Gargan said, the heck with this. We've got the rail. We're going for the lead in the Kentucky Derby. And they tried, and the horse was not nearly fast enough during the first part of the race, which is what got him into trouble. He got shuffled back because he didn't have the speed to get up among the first flight and keep himself out of traffic trouble. And so I think Dornock's going in the wrong direction, and I don't like him either.
I wish they'd find an easier spot for him, to be perfectly honest, because he's a pretty nice horse. He's just not the right horse for this.
Well, Zoe Protective is next. Tyler Gaffleone, who was taken off Sierra Leone, winds up riding this horse for Todd Pletcher. Randy, you must know this because this is a big rabbit hole question. Has a maiden ever won the Belmont?
I'm sure at some point a maiden has won the Belmont, but I do not know. I do not know.
Right. Okay, Protective is not your average maiden. He ran third in the Peter Pan, third in the Wood Memorial. I've already said I don't like the horses coming out of either one of those races, and he's never even won a race. Mike Rapoli's thrown him in there after Fierceness was ruled out of the race, which was going to be their big gun in there. you know, can he suck along for fourth or third? I suppose, but not going to be on my tickets.
He'll get a winning ride from Tyler Gaffione because he'll do his damnedest to make this horse run well.
You can make the case that he was the best horse in the Peter Pan, although, as Bill has pointed out, that you know, that's not exactly a huge feather in his cap. He had some traffic trouble coming down the stretch a little bit, and he was gaining at the end on the 1-2 finishers. But before that, he had a beautiful rail trip. So you got to take that with a little bit of grain of salt. I'm not going to use it.
Number 8 is Honor Marie. This is my wise guy horse. And this horse had truly had a really hard trip in the Kentucky Derby, was slammed around in the start and wound up being last down the backstretch. And at that point, Ben Curtis, the jockey, I mean, he thought he needed to get the horse into the race, and he did. And you look at the running line, at the second call, he's 20 beaten 15 lengths. At the third call, he's 10th, beaten 4.5. He made a huge middle move to get into contention, but he just couldn't sustain it. He had a really bad trip. I don't know how good he is. I don't know if he's good enough to win this race or not with a good trip. You certainly can question that, as he was second Louisiana Derby behind Catching Freedom. But all things being equal, this horse should run a lot better than his 12-1 odds suggest.
If it's a wet track, definitely he'll run a whole lot better, Honor Marie. His damned Dame Marie only ever ran on the grass, and two of his siblings did their best running on the grass. I believe his future eventually is going to be on the turf. And a lot of turf horses run pretty well on maybe a wet track or a sloppy track. I can just see him running better with a bit of moisture in the track. Is he good enough? I don't think so, but should the rain come, and there's a 50% forecast on all 3 days, which obviously is subject to change, today's just Tuesday, that's going to help him.
Yeah, I mean, the weather forecast, I just looked it up. 70% of rain, a chance of rain Wednesday night, 80% Thursday, 60% Thursday night, 70% Friday, 40% Friday night, 70% Saturday. Rain. And that would help Honor Marie. What I don't like about him is this. Yes, he got into all kinds of trouble. He's squeezed at the start, but he's going to be back there anyway. He's a deep closer to begin with. So it's not like he's a front runner that got squeezed back to the back of the pack. He also got bumped by T.O. Password going around the first turn, into the first turn. But again, he's going to be back there anyway. Look at Sierra Leone's running line in the Kentucky Derby. Now, there is a point of call that's skipped when you get to a mile and a quarter in Equibase DRF past performances. It's sort of condensed. You look at Sierra Leone, he goes from 17th, 12 back, to 8th, 2¾ lengths back, right? The pace was quick. The entire field was beginning to gain as the front runner slowed, okay? And Honor Marie was actually in a good spot back there. Sierra Leone was back there. Forever Young was back there. Given the race shape of the Kentucky Derby, that's kind of where Honor Marie would want to be if you looked at the pace and you were drawing it up beforehand. And yet, he finished this final quarter in 27 2/5 seconds. He just didn't finish the deal like some of the other horses that were back in the back there in the back of the pack with him. So that bothers me about Honor Marie, and that's why I'm not going to use him.
Well, I bet you we all are going to use Sierra Leone, the 9 horse, the 9-5 morning line favorite. Sometimes I think we make this game too complicated. He's the best horse in the race. As long as he runs straight, and even if he doesn't, even if he lugs in a little bit, you know, he was so good in the Kentucky Derby, so good in the Bluegrass. Yeah, we're all concerned about his running style and his habits and whatnot. But Flavian Pratt and Chad Brown have now had some time to go to work on that. There's 10 horses in the race. He's easily the most talented horse in the race. Nothing about the distance should bother him. He ran great at a mile and a quarter in the Derby. I'd like to be a little bit more creative and come up with something, you know, to pick some 20-1 shot in here. But Sierra Leone is my confident pick in the Belmont Stakes.
Yeah. If this were a mile and a half, and I won't go down that deep rabbit hole here, I think he would win like point given or risen star, right? I mean, I think he is just a dominant horse in this field. And I think that he'll win comfortably, even if he lugs in a little bit through the lane. I think he's just, you know, solidly the best horse. And I do expect the cage bit to make a bit of a difference in the way he runs. Who knows? But I trust Chad Brown when he makes decisions like that.
He's definitely the best horse in the race, and I think he'll get a good trip from the outside. Flavian's got an awful long resume. He's a very good horseman. He's a good rider. I'm not knocking Tyler Gaffione whatsoever, and I do feel terribly for him. But Flavian will definitely be cognizant on how he has to ride this horse. So I trust in Flavian, and I trust in Sierra Leone.
If this were a mile and a half at Belmont Park, guys, I could see Sierra Leone going to the lead about halfway around the second turn, right? Having a clear lead when he turns for home, opening up down the stretch, lugging into the rail, but it doesn't matter because he's by himself and winning in dominant fashion. I don't expect him to be that dominant at a mile and a quarter, but yeah, I agree with you guys.
Lastly is Mindframe. Very interesting horse in this race. Has shown tremendous talent, winning an allowance race at Churchill Downs and a maiden at Gulfstream. Opened up lengths, blew the fields away. But talk about asking a lot of a horse. Has never run beyond a mile and 16th. Has only had two lifetime starts. Has never run in a stakes race. To now have to go into the mile and a quarter Belmont and run against much more seasoned horses. He's going to have to be the second coming of Flightline, practically, to be able to win the race under those conditions.
Yeah, we don't know how good he is. I can tell you one thing, his dad was pretty damn good at Charlestown. She won 4 of 7 at Charlestown. So she was a Charlestown runner. The siblings have been Turf and Presque Isle runners. So the jury is out. He just might be an anomaly. They paid a lot of money for him, $600,000, a son of Constitution. Who knows? I honestly don't know what to think of Mindframe other than he's not been tested yet. He's going to get a clear trip on the outside. He gets around Ortiz. It's Saratoga. That's Arad's track. He knows him very well. He could be the biggest competition to Sierra Leone without even knowing how good he is. And he's going to get bet like it.
So you just lost all right to complain about my rabbit hole, Zoe. The dam of Mindframe went 4 for 7 at Charlestown. We're talking about the Belmont Stakes. Okay. All right. Look, I can see Seize the Gray going to the lead. I think that's got to be the strategy from post position number one, given what happened in the Preakness. And I think Mindframe will be lapped right on him, right on his flank to the outside, keeping the pressure on him. And I expect Mindframe to take the lead turning for home. At that point, you're probably going to have Mystic Dan making his little run and maybe Antiquarian and Sierra Leone's getting geared up and all that. So the question is just going to be, you know, is Mindframe good enough / seasoned enough to really hang in there for the final quarter mile at Saratoga? I'm going to use him in the bottom of the – I'll actually use him second in some exactas underneath Sierra Leone. And also, obviously, in the third and fourth spots. But I think he's going to run a good race. He's very, very talented.
He's my exacta.
Are we all three picking Sierra Leone to win? Unanimous?
Enthusiastically.
Yes. Okay.
And Zoe?
Yes, I'm in. Okay. All in.
Three for three on Sierra Leone.
He's screwed.
Yeah, he is. He's not going to carry all of us. Had a hope in hell. Right. We want to remind you that each and every week, the TDN Writers' Room is brought to you by Keeneland. The Keeneland September sale produced two graded winners this past weekend. On Saturday, Keeneland September grad Play the Music won the Grade 3 Royal North Stakes at Woodbine for Glassman Racing. Congrats to Kathy and Carl for that. And Mark Cassie, of course. And on Sunday, Delahaye took away the Grade 3 Mint Julep Stakes at Churchill for owners Bill Lawrence, Three Chimneys Farm, and trainer Chad Brown, who's going to be busy this weekend at Saratoga. Make plans to attend this fall's Keeneland September sale starting on September the 9th. We'll be right back after this message from Keeneland.
You've Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. On behalf of the management and staff of Keeneland, I would like to welcome you to the September yearling sale. Good to have you back with us.
The energy at Keeneland Book One is unlike any other sale that you'll go to.
It is the marketplace.
The center of the horse universe.
It's electric. You can't replicate the urgency that's at Keeneland September.
Quality in quantity.
Keeneland September Book One, every breeder's dream.
This Fastest Horse of the Week segment brought to you by Constitution, one of those fast sires at Windstar Farm. Constitution got another graded winner last Saturday when the rapidly improving three-year-old filly Pin Up Betty stepped up from a maiden win into Stakes Company and took the Grade 3 Regret Stakes at Churchill Downs. And Constitution will be represented in the Belmont Stakes by the talented Mind Frame. Constitution, the number two sire right now of graded stakes-winning three-year-olds in North America. And he stands at Windstar Farm for $110,000. Now, the fastest horse of the week this week is the suddenly relevant Happy Jack, who won Saturday's 7-furlong triple bend at Santa Anita by 4 1/4 lengths with a buyer speed figure of 105. The triple bend was his first stakes win, but 5 weeks before that, the Calumet Farm five-year-old touted himself when he returned from a 10-month layoff, right? To run a 101 buyer and come within 3/4 of a length of upsetting the chosen Vron in the Kona Gold Stakes. Coming up, Zoe will have more on Happy Jack on First Things First. It is that time of the podcast for our guest of the week, brought to you as always by The Green Group, a tax consulting and advisory firm specializing in the thoroughbred industry.
Welcome in now, the Green Group guest of the week, and it's an old favorite of mine, Richard Migliori, a guy who'd had a great career as a jockey and is doing, I say, just as well as a TV commentator now, as he's part of the Fox program that will be airing the Belmont Stakes on Saturday. Richie, welcome, and thanks for joining us here on the TDN Writers Room podcast. I always wondered about this. You are a New York guy, New York through and through. You root for all the New York sports teams. You were born and raised in New York. How would you compare? You were never lucky enough to win the Belmont or the Derby, but would you have rather won the Belmont than the Derby?
Wow, that's a great question. I mean, you know, the easy answer would be the Derby, because that's the first thing people ask you. Did you ever win the Kentucky Derby? And I was fortunate. I won a lot of Derbies. I would have traded them all for one Kentucky Derby. But honestly, the Belmont and the Travers probably held more allure to me. The Kentucky Derby, for me growing up, could have been, you know, on Mars. I was going to Aqueduct for races like the Sport Page Handicap and the Toboggan. Those were tangible to me, but it would have been nice to win any one of them. Unfortunately, it wasn't in the cards.
So, Richie, what are you expecting the scene to be like with the Belmont Stakes run at Saratoga for the very first time?
I can already feel the energy that's been in town. I got up here Saturday morning. I ran back home for one day, but you know, Saratoga always holds that kind of energy, and you feel the charm of it, the mystique of Saratoga, but it's amped up even more here. I don't want to say it's going to be a madhouse, but it's going to be on the edge of chaos. I'm excited about it. Listen, Saratoga to me is America's classic racetrack, obviously home to the National Museum of Racing and Hall of Fame. So much history here, and you could feel the history. It's palpable. And now we're having an American Classic. And I know a lot of people are upset, oh, it's not a mile and a half. Well, the Belmont Stakes have been run at five different distances at five different locales already. So, yes, in the modern era, there's tradition about it. But, you know, the more things stay the same, the more things change.
Mick, where are you right now? It looks like you're in a very green place. Would you happen to be on a picnic table somewhere?
I am on a picnic table right outside the paddock. I bombed in here. Bees are buzzing me. And I just felt bad. I hate telling somebody I'll be ready at 12 and not be ready, you know, until after. I hate being late. I'm a very punctual kind of guy.
That being said, is it possible to still get a reservation in Saratoga? Because this weekend to me seems like, is it a little bit busier than Travers weekend? Because that's the only thing I compare it to.
Yeah, it's even busier. You have to go as far away as Albany or up towards Lake George to find a hotel room that you could get for any one of the days. There's still tickets for Thursday, Friday, Sunday here at Saratoga. Saturday's completely sold out. But yeah, no, even dinner reservations. Luckily, Zoe, I have friends that are in the restaurant business up here, and I will be picking up takeout every night.
Richie, one of the biggest differences, not only that the race is being run in Saratoga as opposed to Belmont, but is the difference in the on the distance of the race, which you mentioned earlier, from a mile and a half to a mile and a quarter. There's no way they could have run this thing at a mile and a half at Saratoga. That would have made no sense. And anybody thinks it should be a mile and a half race. No, you're just wrong about that. But how about from a jockey's perspective? Will the riders ride this race any differently because it's a mile and a quarter at Saratoga versus a mile and a half at Belmont?
I do believe, Bill, they'll ride it differently. I think going a mile and a half, which is not a distance that is common in North America, particularly on the dirt, riders ride it much more carefully. They're much more inclined to worry about a horse getting the distance. A mile and a quarter, you know, a lot of these horses obviously have run in the Derby. They're not as going to be as concerned about the mile and a quarter. So I do believe they'll ride them a bit differently. I do think you'll see more of a legitimate pace, particularly in this Belmont, because there are three or four that I think are confirmed, not front runners, but forward type horses. So yeah, I do think it'll be ridden considerably different in that respect.
I'm one of those people who do think it should be run at a mile and a half, and I don't think I'm wrong about it, but I do understand why they're not, because it would be started on the turn. But let's talk about Sierra Leone, first of all, Richie. I mean, he's the horse that is going to be the favorite, probably a pretty solid favorite, I think. And a lot of the talk about Sierra Leone is obviously his Kentucky Derby and the lugging in, and now the jockey change and the bit change. Give us your opinion about all that.
Well, this is a horse, Sierra Leone, that has always shown that propensity to want to lug in. He did it in his first start. I think it cost him the Remsen Stakes because he lugged in on top of Doorknock, and it emboldened Doorknock. Every one of his starts, if you go back and look at his bluegrass, he's not running straight on his own volition. He's having to be corrected. And if you look at some of the still shots of the Derby, he has a snaffle bit, which, you know, Zoe will attest to, is a very mild bit in a horse's mouth. And it's basically pulled all the way through his mouth by Tyler Gaffleone, trying to keep him straight off of Forever Young and go forward. Now, they said they had experimented previous with that bit, and Chad Brown, his conditioner, wasn't thrilled with how he reacted to it. But since the Derby, he's worked in it three times. I was here for the last work, and it looks like it's having the desired effect. So, you know, obviously most people are too young to remember when cars didn't have power steering. Basically, he's outfitted with power steering now, as opposed to with that snaffle bit where he wasn't. I feel bad for Tyler Gaffleone. And let me, you know, couch this by saying, jockeys take off horses all the time to ride a horse they perceive as a better horse, right? Everybody's looking out for their best opportunity. So I'm never going to criticize an owner or trainer for doing what they think they need to do to see success. But I feel for Tyler Gaffleone in this instance because, you know, he rode the horse when it was more difficult to ride him. And now with this change of equipment, he doesn't get that opportunity. And as a former rider, I guess I'm a little sensitive to that. It just doesn't feel like it's 100% fair. Now, that being said, you know, if he could have rode a better one, he might have taken off. That's the nature of the business. I will say I question why he's never worked outside of horses with the new equipment. Every time he works on the rail. And as Zoe knows, a lot of these bigger, tougher kind of colts, a lot of the lugging is about getting over on top of a horse. They want to bully them. They're not as interested in running by them as they are to assert their dominance physically. And I really felt like Forever Young actually facilitated or started that contact and gave him probably 10%, and then he gave back 90%. But I think it kind of set him off a little bit. like a horse came out into, you know, there's a guy in the bar, somebody brushes them and they're, you know, ready to jump and fight, right? I felt like that was a little bit what was going on with Sierra Leone. And I really do think he would have won the Derby if he could have been ridden properly. So you can make the case, I mean, he's two noses away from being undefeated, and you can make the case he should be undefeated. So I do think the bit will help a great deal, but I still would have liked to have seen him work outside of a horse that you would have gotten even a better idea of its effectiveness.
Couldn't agree with you more, Richie. I've been banging on about that for weeks, like work him on the outside. I believe he's trying to get to the rail as well. All right, Richie, put on your beret and put on your Frenchman's accent. Yeah, okay. I want you to take me through the race aboard Sierra Leone as if you are riding him. What does Flavien need to do?
Well, you know, a lot has been made of the trip beyond the bumping that, you know, he had to come wide. He saved ground all the first turn, and I'm a great believer in ground, saving ground. And if you're going to be wide, know you're going to be wide on one turn, you've got to make a conscious effort to be inside as much as possible on the other turn. So obviously you're on a closer. The first turn, you want to save as much ground as possible. He's also not a horse that you can stop and start. You know, much different than Mystic Dan, who is a ballet dancer, right? He can get up in a spot, idle, be asked, pick it up again. He can make multiple moves, which helps a rider out immensely. And it's going to lend himself to getting ground-saving trips and taking advantage of when opportunities present themselves. Sierra Leone is a completely different kind of horse, and he's a horse that runs with his head out and down. He's gotten bigger and stronger since the Derby, guys. I will tell you that. He's actually matured a great deal in these 5 weeks. And you think about it, they're like children. You know, they start to have growth spurts and develop at different stages. For a three-year-old colt, usually from the middle of January, end of January through this period of time, they change a great deal. I've seen the most physical change in him than anybody else since the Kentucky Derby. But again, getting back to it, you can't stop and start him. So you've got to save as much ground on the first turn, in my estimation, if I'm riding Sierra Leone, and start to find my way to a clear path, whether that's inside or outside. But I want to put myself in a position where I don't have to stop him, because I don't think you're going to get him started again. You know, you think about driving a trail of my daughter to a horse show, right? And I've got horses on the back and I got my truck. If I hit the brakes, it takes me a long time to get my momentum going again. If I'm driving a Porsche, I can hit the brakes, stop, start, accelerate again. I think that would be the best way to describe the difference between Mystic Dan, who's a Porsche, and Sierra Leone, who's just more of a truck that once you get that momentum, you don't want to lose it. So I would be looking to get him as clear a trip as possible. I also, if I was riding him, I would have begged to work him. I would have drove up here from anywhere to get on him, so I had a better idea of exactly what I was dealing with.
So if you're riding him now and you're headed toward the stretch and you know his background, what's in the back of your mind?
Well, hopefully by then I'll have a better feel of how much control I have of him and make the decision to put him in the clear. I would prefer to be in the clear with a horse like that, but not if I'm having to fight him or correct him constantly. Because the more you're correcting, the less you're going forward, right? The finish line, the bag of money's up there. You know, if I'm going sideways, I'm inhibiting my ability to get to that bag of money.
You'll go to the Migliori patented left-hand crop.
Well, let's factor this in, guys. You know, we have different crop rules than we used to, and my contention with that has always been that, yes, I do think that riders need to be regulated and have a better education. You know, sometimes riders get caught up in going to the crop because they think that's what people need to see, as opposed to that it's actually being effective. But the limited amount of times, you've got horses with short attention spans, you got horses that lug in or lug out, you're limited by what you can do. And I think when you limit riders or you inhibit riders from reacting naturally to situations, you're not being fair to them. I've seen horses win by five lengths and get hit once that I think the rider should have been called in. I've seen horses stopping that a rider hits three or four times that should be called in. You are not allowing people to do their jobs and in the moment. And it's not like you have a lot of time to think about it. You have to be able to react and allow your instincts to take over. And I think it inhibits instincts. So, I think Flavian has to be aware of that too. I have six times that I could really get at this horse. And, you know, how do I meet that out? Do I save it for crunch time? Do I get him early so I can get him away from horses and go forward? I think that's where sometimes I have trouble with some of these restrictions.
Richie, it sounds like you're going to pick Sierra Leone on the Fox show on Saturday. I want your wise guy long shot play. Who else in this field is somebody that you think is going to give it a good fight and could perhaps post the upset?
Well, I don't think people should look at Seize the Gray's race as a fluke. Yes, he did get to set a very comfortable pace and he had things his own way. But I also see a horse that has taken a step. He's a different horse. And if you look at his last work since the Preakness, he was an okay workhorse. He looked like an extremely enthusiastic participant in that work. I think he's a horse that might actually get overlooked, and I don't think he should. Resilience has trained really, really well up here in Saratoga. I was really taken with him the other morning. Bill Mott, I think, is going to have a tremendous weekend. I think he's got a lot of horses coming into this weekend, hitting on all cylinders. I guess, gun to my head, I would go with Resilience as my wise guy, longer shot.
What's your opinion about Mindframe?
Mindframe is extremely talented, but the way I frame this is they knew Mike Tyson was going to be champion of the world when he was 16. He still fought 15, 16 guys that weren't at his level before he started taking on, you know, fighters that could test him. And I just think it's a lot to ask for a horse in his third start. I think he's phenomenally talented, but the seasoning is not there.
This is vintage Richie. We talked about Porsches. We talked about Mike Tyson, and we've got all these similes that are now coming into the picture.
Do you think I'm going to bring it on this Fox show? Do you think I'm bringing it?
This is the dress rehearsal. All right, Richie, let's talk Matt Mile, and more specifically, not really the horses, but it's an unusual configuration, one that it's never been run out, coming out of that new shoot by the 1800 Club, 1880 Club. How are jockeys going to ride this? How would you ride it? What is the good post position? And what is the bad? Where do you not want to be?
Well, I have to say they did a phenomenal job with this shoot. I actually rode a few of the mile races, what they called the new Wilson shoot in the 80s, or maybe the early 90s. And it really wasn't. It was just basically the placement of the gate on the outside fence. And if you were inside, you were looking at the inner rail. You had to come out to make room for yourself. And if you were outside, you were past the crown of the track. This is a true shoot. And they did a really good job with it. And the test for me, Zoe, was going out there watching the races that they ran at it. And you know yourself, when you hear riders yelling at each other, maybe cursing at each other, you hear body contact between horses, you would say it wasn't constructed well. It's been quiet as a church mouse. You basically have a good 70 yards before you have to make any hard and fast decisions the way they've built this chute. There's a pretty good straightaway. I would compare it to, and actually I think you have even a bit more of a run to what actually where the turn starts, to a mile and eighth here at Saratoga or a mile and eighth at Aqueduct, where you have a short run of that first turn and there's a lot more jockeying for position going on immediately. I really think, you know, riders have about 70 yards before they have to start jockeying for position, excuse the pun, but it fits. And in a small field, I really don't feel like there's any advantage or disadvantage. Six horses, I think everybody's going to have a really fair chance. I think you get a bigger field, you know, 10 or more, then you start worrying about being outside a little bit, but not in a six horse field. I really think it's negligible.
Who's the horse to beat?
Well, I mean, obviously White Abario, and I think he's really kind of come to hand the last few works for this. I think he'll be very tough.
Richard Migliori, thank you so much for being our Green Group Guest of the Week. We'll be following you on the broadcast on Fox on Saturday for the Belmont Stakes at Saratoga. It's going to be a great event in the history of horse racing. No matter who wins, you're going into this knowing this is going to be something extremely special. And Richie, I'll be home watching you, and I'm sure you'll be telling the listeners all the good things that are going on. I want to thank you for being our Green Group Guest of the Week, and good luck on Saturday with your broadcast.
Thank you, guys. This was a lot of fun. And I'm, you know, obviously friends with all of you, but a big fan of all of you as well.
Cheers, Meg.
Likewise. And as the Green Group Guest of the Week, Richard Migliori will receive a free 1-hour tax consultation with the Green Group. Now, this is not an environmental company. It's green, as in the founder, Len Green. I mean, Len might be environmentally friendly as well, but he's best known in the thoroughbred business as saving a lot of money on the tax bills for those of you in the thoroughbred industry. For more information, you can go to greencoat.com.
When it comes to the horse industry, tax laws are complicated and unique. That is why most people overpay on their taxes. Why not get a second opinion from the top-rated accounting and tax firm in the thoroughbred industry? With over 800 clients in the horse business alone, the Green Group has the expertise to save you taxes. There is a reason the most successful owners, breeders, trainers, vets, and horsemen use the Green Group as their tax advisors. We save you taxes. Over the past 40 years, the Green Group founder, Len Green, has owned and bred some of the best racehorses in the history of the sport. His DJ stable competes at the highest level and has received the game's most prestigious honors. Len Green's in-depth, hands-on industry knowledge, combined with current-edge tax-saving strategies, produces positive tax-saving results for clients. Take advantage of this special offer. The Green Group will give you a complimentary and confidential review of your tax return. Contact us at 732-634-5100 or visit our website at www.greenco.com.
The state of Pennsylvania has the best breeders program in the entire United States.
When you buy a yearling, it's a little bit like buying a lottery ticket. And we are trying to provide the lottery ticket that the likelihood is to hit the jackpot.
Angel of Empire wins the Arkansas Derby and wins it clear.
Uncle Heavy late hits a photo finish.
Pennsylvania and the PHBA have the best state bred program in the country, bar none.
The winner, Uncle Heavy, he's a 3-year-old bred in Pennsylvania.
The TD and Riders Room, also brought to you by the Pennsylvania Horse Breeders Association, the PHBA. Last week, we previewed Friday night's big card at Penn National, and Frankie Dettori swept the Penn Oaks and the Penn Mile. His career record at Penn National is now a perfect 2-for-2. Meanwhile, the other four stakes on the card were won by Pennsylvania breds. Two of those stakes were restricted to PA breds. Stern Chaser took the Leafard Stakes for owners and breeders Greg and Carolyn Bentley. And then Fierce and Strong won the With Anticipation Stakes for Ultra Championship Racing. Those races, part of a 23-race schedule this year of $100,000 stakes races for PA breds. And spinning forward now in Grade 1 and Grade 2 stakes at Saratoga this weekend, Pennsylvania will be well represented. Roses for Deborah, the 6-5 favorite in the Intercontinental Stakes. That's morning line odds. That'll be on Friday. She was bred by Blackstone Farm. Breeders are a big deal here, so we're going to hit them all. Also Friday, Nisi Marie, bred by John Marshall, goes in the New York Stakes on Saturday. 90% Maddie goes in the True North for breeder LC Racing. Maximus Meridius, bred by LC Racing, Cassius King, and Butch Reed, goes in the Woody Stevens. And finally, I'm Very Busy, drew the rail in the Manhattan. He was bred by Glenn Bach and Mark Toothaker. For more on owning and breeding your very own PA breds, you have three options. As you can see, you can call 610-444-1050. You can email info@pabred.com, or you can just visit pabred.com.
On this week's edition of First Things First, I caught up with the winning jock, Edwin Maldonado, fresh off of Happy Jack's victory in the Grade 2 Triple Bend. Talk about Happy Jack. I have a very happy Edwin Maldonado here now. Edwin, we've all watched the Chosen Ron trounce his competition. This guy was second to him last time out. But with Frankie aboard, you've been on him in the morning. Were you expecting that kind of a performance? What did Doug tell you?
No, dog said, you know, when Frankie rode him, he thought he was going to be a little far back, and he jumped, he was a little closer, and Frankie loved him there, and that's what dog said today, you know, if he breaks a little closer, you know, take what they give you.
Did you have horse the whole way? Because he looked like a happy camper crossing the wire.
Yes, he's been working great. I had a lot of horse. When we passed the 3-8 pole, I smooshed at him a little bit to see how much I had, and he kind of took off. So I was like, okay, I guess I have a ton left. And when he turned full home and I asked him, he responded very well.
Congratulations, Edwin.
Thank you.
Happy Jack, off to bigger and better things. Thanks very much to Edwin. We'll be interested to see where Happy Jack shows up next. But we do know one thing, guys. He is the fastest horse of the week, as already mentioned by our own Randolph Moss. Do want to remind you that racing does continue at Santa Anita this weekend. Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Come out on Saturday and watch the Belmont Stakes. We have Wine Place Show, something I believe our producer, Sue Finley, might be interested in. You come in, you drink wine, you watch horse racing. What is better than that? Come and join us on Saturday at Santa Anita.
Well, we've done the Belmont Stakes field. Let's take a look at some of the other big races over the weekend. We'd be here all day if we tried to talk about all of them. So I just picked out the grade one events
for us to
talk about. What's that, good Zoe?
I've got all day. I've got nowhere to be.
Yeah, but our listeners don't have all day. We have to, our listeners come first. So we are going to do just the grade one races, and we'll leave the rest up to your imagination. Starting off on Friday, a great card on Friday as well. The 10th race is the Just a Game Stakes. Gee, here's a surprise. Chad Brown has won it 6 times, and he's going to be very tough in this race. He's got Copiche. He's got Chili Flag. He's got Boat Cachet. I'm sure I'm just butchering those pronunciations. Gina Romantica. He is represented up and down the pike. And then still another one, White Beam. So this is the Chad Brown Invitational. How can you not pick Chad Brown? I'm picking Copiche. The Tory takes over the mount after rode him absolutely at Churchill Downs as well in the Distaff Turf Mile. See, the horse got an awkward start. He did. He broke pretty poorly. Then he had to really fight to get his way in up into into the competition. Fought very gamely in the stretch. Just looks like that was his first start of the year. Had some trouble. Expect him to improve. So of the Chads, I'll go with Copiche.
Yeah, look, any of the Chads could win, as we know, and there's a lot to be said for taking the other Chad Brown horse, right? But White Beam is actually the program favorite in here. Surprised me a little bit, and that's not one of the ones I like. I'm going with you, Bill, and I'm going to let Ron Anderson, the jockey agent to the stars, sort of make my decision for me here. Boutte Cachet won the Ginny Wiley at Keeneland at 25-1. Chad Brown at 25-1. That was back in April. And Tatori was in the saddle. She won wire to wire, and she was tremendously impressive. And yet, Tatori and Ron Anderson take off of that 5-year-old mare to ride Coppice in this spot. And I like Coppice for the same reasons that you pointed out. Chad Brown told us when we went to talk to him before that race, I think it was maybe the Wednesday before the Distaff Turf Mile. We were talking about all the horses that he had running at Churchill Downs that week. And I asked him about Coppice. I think I might've mentioned this on the podcast earlier. He said, don't be surprised if she is collecting an Eclipse Award at the end of the year. That's how high he was on Coppice going into that race. And I think that's maybe one reason why Dettori lands here instead of on Boutte Cachet.
Well, Coppice is a full sister to Calyx, who's a very good horse in Europe. She's by Kingman. She didn't get the best of trips, but got a good trip under Frankie at Churchill Downs. And yes, we're all going to land on her. So good luck to Coppice for Chubmont Farms with the three of us. As far as Boutte Cachet, this was the horse that Chad Brown told Frankie Dettori, yeah, we'll just take her back. Ease her back and come with a run. And Frankie just went, yeah, we'll just go to the lead. So we'll see what Manny Franco does on Boutte Cachet. But I think we're all on the right horse here with Coppice. Who's
all right.
Got a bright future. I mean, look, she ran a couple of lengths behind In Spiral when In Spiral was good. That's good enough for anyone.
The 11th race on the Friday card is the New York Stakes. And only two Chads in here. What's a handicapper to do when he only has two Chads to pick from? He has McCulloch, and he also has Royalty Interest, the 12 horse, which is 20 to 1 in the morning line. Again, something you don't see too often from Chad Brown. This is one of the better betting races in the entire 2 days, the Friday, Saturday. Very wide open. The Chad Brown horses are going to be tough. Joseph O'Brien has American Sonia, who ran in the Saratoga Oaks Invitational last year and ran a good second and then has come back to win a grade three in France. I'm going to go for the Canadian horse, Fev Rover. She's the Canadian horse of the year. This is a very evenly matched race, but a lot of times people will discount Canadian horses. She did win the Beverly D, a grade one in the U.S. She ran a good third in the Diana. And then she came back and won the E.P. Taylor up in Woodbine back in October. Didn't really run that well on the Breeders' Cup Filly and Mare turf, but I have a lot of respect for Mark Cassie. I have a lot of respect for this horse. This is not a case where, there's five or six horses I kind of like. So I just look for a price here and I go for Fev Rover.
All right. Well, I am not going for Fev Rover in here, and I'm not going for Chad Brown either. I'm going to stick with Godolphin and Charlie Appleby. I'm going English Rose coming in here with Buick riding for Appleby. Nobody expected Boutte Cachet to be on the lead that day. She took everyone by surprise, including the trainer. So she wins that race. Buick aboard a Euro import. Actually, was closer than anyone thought she would be as well. So English Rose can be tactical, which is what I want to see. And if you're wondering how many horses Chad Brown runs over the weekend, it's 33 separate individual betting interests over the 3 days at Saratoga, 24 of those in stakes. So expect him to be busy all weekend.
When I talked in the Just a Game Stakes about how good Boutte Cachet ran when she won the Ginny Wiley and how fast she ran, English Rose was right behind her, beaten just a length and a half. But it was how she got there that was so impressive to me. This filly was unbelievably rank during the first part of the race with William Buick. She was throwing her head in the air like crazy. And usually that only happens for, maybe an eighth of a mile, and then a rider like Buick can get her settled down. No, she was rank almost all the way down the backstretch. And then she finishes in 22.96 for the final quarter mile and is gaining on Boutte Cachet at the end after being that rank in the early part of the race. Now, I don't know what was going on with her. I watched some of her European races and she wasn't like that. So maybe they've got that settled down. Hell, maybe they'll just go to the lead because there's not a lot of early speed in here. Maybe that'll settle her down. But she showed an awful lot of talent in that race to finish second after what happened to her the first part of the race. So that's my pick as well.
12th race is the Acorn, and Just FYI is in here. Zoe, what was your bet with Randy where you won a Just yes. FYI versus someone else? That's part one. And part two, did he ever pay up or is he?
Not yet.
I'm still waiting. I mean, we could go again if you want, like treble or nothing.
I'm trying to avoid shipping costs. I should have done it at the same place at the Kentucky Derby, and the Preakness.
There you
but anyway,
go.
I will get there.
We That's are okay. on record that Randy Moss owes Zoe Cadman yes. some fabulous amount of alcohol or whatever it was that you bet. Again, just like I said about Sierra Leone, why get fancy here? Torpedo Anna looks so good in the Kentucky Oaks. She's the best three-year-old filly out there. It's interesting that this race is now a two-turn mile and eighth race. Whenever it was run at Belmont Park, it was always around one turn. I like Just FYI, but she hasn't really made that transition from two to three. I don't think that she's running all that much better or all that much faster than when she was a three-year-old, despite the fact that she's made Zoe a lucky winner of the bet with Randy. I'll just go with Torpedo Anna in there.
I'm going to stick with Just FYI. I like the fact that she's drawn inside Torpedo Anna. And Junior Alvarado, if you're listening, just go. She breaks good. Just go and gallop them into the ground and get beat that way. If you're going to get beat that way. Torpedo Anna, I can't talk you off of her. I really can't. She's going to be good from the outside. Where's My Ring? Had a disastrous trip in the Kentucky Oaks. She'll be part of the pace as well, having won the Grade 3 Gazelle, which isn't really a great race, but I'm just thinking from a pace standpoint, she'll be right there. And Gunsong, don't forget about Gunsong. She is flying under the radar, and she keeps Johnny V.
I mean, what a race this is. Six horses coming from the Kentucky Oaks, including the Oaks winner, Torpedo Anna, the winner of the Black Eyed Susan, Gunsong, who didn't run in the Kentucky Oaks because she couldn't get in. It's just an example of why, in my opinion, these races leading up to Belmont Stakes, whether they're in New York, or I mean, whether they're at Saratoga or Belmont Park, it's the best weekend of racing other than the Breeders' Cup that we have all year long. I think it's even better than the Kentucky Derby undercard, honestly. And I think that's primarily because it's in New York and so many of the top stables are based and focus on New York. As far as this race in particular goes, Torpedo Anna, yeah, she was dominant in the Oaks, but a lot of the conversation, the analysis of that race, centered around Brian Hernandez choosing to go to the lead with Torpedo Anna, which meant that he had a rail trip around both turns, while Just FYI was basically three wide around both turns from post 12 in a 14-horse field. You factor the difference there, about a length for each path, and yeah, that's three or four lengths difference there. And Just FYI was beaten 4 3/4 by Torpedo Anna. Is that going to be enough for her to turn the tables? To me, I'd give a slight edge to Torpedo Anna. But if the odds are going to be, you know, a enticing discrepancy, which is possible, if Torpedo Anna goes off at 7-5 or 8-5 and Just FYI's 3-1, then in that instance, I think Just FYI becomes the better play.
Let's go to Saturday's grade ones, and they start off with the Ogden Phipps race 7. Idiomatic, yes. Zoe?
Oh, hold on. I'm still pulling it up.
Randy?
Go ahead. What was your question?
Was no question. I just said she's going to win. I'm throwing it to you. Sometimes it's that easy.
Look, she won the La Troyenne despite not even running close to her best race. Right? I know Brad Cox, you know, probably had her in his mind sitting on all cylinders going into that race, but sometimes horses are just a little bit rusty. And Idiomatic was in against horses that she should have been able to dominate, and she did dominate, but not until like maybe the final 16th of a mile. There was some question at some points coming down the lane whether she was actually going to be able to pull it off, and she was 4-5 that day. She's 3-5 on the program line here. You know, yes, she is the horse to beat, but I'm not nearly as confident in Idiomatic, let's say, as I am about Sierra Leone and the Belmont Stakes, because I think the competition here is pretty solid. First of all, Randomized, she only beat by a half length in the Breeders' Cup Distaff. Soul of an Angel stepped into a different dimension when she got into the barn of Sappy Joseph in her last start. Raging Sea, visually very impressive with a great trip and a grade three at Keeneland. Yeah, Idiomatic's the favorite, deservingly so, but I'm not going to take her at a short price.
I'll take the younger against the older. And I'll take Randomized on the rail against Idiomatic. Four-year-old versus five-year-old for me.
All right. Interesting take on the Ogden Phipps Stakes. And we go next to the Woody Stevens Stakes. You know how Randy has like 32 favorite horses?
You have one.
I've got one.
Because it's a New Jersey bred.
And he's running in the Woody Stevens. Go book him, Dano, my friend. I'm gonna pick him because I'm biased towards the Jersey breds, and it's more a pick from my heart. He has a very good chance. He ran second behind Forever Young. We saw it Forever Young in Saudi Arabia. We saw what Forever Young came back to do in the Kentucky Derby. Might have won the race if not for all those antics in the stretch. This is though the connections have really put him in a tough spot. You know, Prince of Monaco is obviously going to be really tough coming in for Bob Baffert, the horse that won the Del Mar Futurity last year. But no, this is my two fills. Book 'em, Dano.
Prince of Monaco is doing awfully well for Hall of Famer Bob Baffert. Comes in off the layoff. Bob excels with horses coming off the layoff. Comes in with three of his last four works have been out of the gate. He's broke on cue every time. He most definitely is the horse to beat in here, but I'll tell you who else is the horse to beat, I believe, is Nash. The 9, Brad Cox and Godolphin teaming up, beaten by Caesar Gray in the grade 2 Pat Day Mile last time out. And he'll get Giroux aboard him, and he will be forwardly placed on Saturday.
A Okay, more about Bill's favorite horse, the photo finish loss in the Saudi Derby. If you recall, we don't do obviously buyer speed figures for Middle Eastern races, but we estimated that one, and it turned out to be a pretty damn good estimate at a 101 buyer speed figure. So Bookham Dano, you can sort of pencil in 101 there, easily a career high buyer. But you know what I'm worried about the most about him? Post position number one at 7 furlongs in a race in which he does not have an early speed advantage. And there are about 8 other horses who have his level of tactical speed that are positioned right outside of him. Irad is going to need every bit of guile and maybe Irad aggressiveness that he can muster to try to get out of that spot that Bookham Dano is going to find himself in, unless he just gets really lucky and the field just opens up for him. I don't have a strong opinion. It's such a good race. I mean, unbelievable race from top to bottom. I'm not going to go through them all, but I think Prince of Monaco from post 7 would be the horse I would take.
All right, we move along now to the Jiper Stakes. Where's Casa Creed? He used to run this race like every year for like the last 15 years. Won it in 21 and 22. Really great sprinter, turf sprinter trained by Bill Mott. And Randy, just as you said about the Woody Stevens, what a great betting race it is. I mean, this is a race that is really going to challenge handicappers. There's 12 in the body of the race, plus also eligibles. It's also worth noting that it's at 5.5 furlongs when it was normally run at 6 at Belmont. I don't believe they can run a 6-furlong turf race at Saratoga. Not very confident in this race, but I'm going to go with Cogburn for Steve Asmussen. And look what he's done since in the middle of his career. He turned him into a turf horse. And other than a loss at Kentucky Downs, he's won 4 of the 5 turf races that he's been entered in. He's got his 2 best buyer career speed figures, a 102 and a 100, including the 100 at Saratoga last year where he won on a soft course. This race could go 8 or 9 different ways, but I just think Asmussen has figured something out about this horse, has him going strong on the grass, and look for him to keep things rolling.
Yeah, I mean, my temptation would be to go for Godolphin and Charlie Appleby. They have 2 horses in here. William Buick presumably had his choice and winds up on Mischief Magic. But Mischief Magic was beaten 3 lengths in the Churchill Downs turf sprint by Cogburn and Philo Di Ariana with a little bit of an excuse, but not a ton of an excuse. And before that, he was beaten by Arzak in the Shakertown. He's 8-1 in the morning line. So it's tough to get overly excited about him. But at a slightly longer distance here at 6 furlongs, or no, it's 5.5 furlongs. So it's not a slightly longer distance. I take that back. But at 8-1 on the morning line with Godolphin, Appleby, and William Buick, and an outside post, which I like in this spot, that's going to be the one for me. And also one other little note, he's been gelded since his last race. Since the May 4th Churchill Downs turf sprint, in which he finished 3rd, he has been officially gelded. So he shows up as a first time gelding and, why not at 8-1?
Is there an unofficial gelding? I mean, there's official and then there's unofficial, is there?
I don't think there's an unofficial gelding. No. I think you're right.
All right, Bill, in answer to your question, Casa Creed does actually run on Saturday, but he runs in an easier spot. He goes in the grade 3 poker. So if you're a Casa Creed fan, you will be able to see him on Saturday, just not in this spot. I'm going for a horse for course angle in here with Big Invasion, 8-1 on the morning line. You mentioned Rosario's agent, the genius himself. He opts to stick aboard Big Invasion after running 10th, beating 11 lengths last out in the grade 2 turf sprint at Churchill Downs. Rosario sticks. This horse has never been worse than 2nd in 3 starts at Saratoga over the turf course. It's Big Invasion for me.
What do you make of his last race? I loved him last time.
I'm complete toss for me. I think the ground was listed as good. It had rained all week. Maybe that was the deal. He seems to handle the turf course at Saratoga better than he handles any turf course anywhere. So to me, it's a toss. I don't know what to think. So I'm drawing a line through it.
All right. We move on now to the Met Mile. the co-feature on the card. $1 million going to go out of that chute on the far turn. And field of six, but you got some awful nice horses in here, including White Iberio and National Treasure, who are two of the best older horses in the country. Post time will take some bets as well, no doubt about it. I didn't like White Iberio's race in the Saudi Cup. Now, having said that, there's been plenty of horses that have gone over there and just haven't run. But when you compare that to National Treasure, who was fourth, beaten a length and a half, was 13 and a half lengths ahead of White Iberio at the finish. And Baffert's found the key to this horse, too. You know, last year around this time when he ran in the Belmont, he was just another horse, even though he won the Preakness, because that was a weak Preakness. He comes in, he runs okay, not okay in the Belmont, not okay in the Travers, not okay in the Awesome again. Then all of a sudden, this big, huge race in the Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile against Cody's Wish, and he's been really good ever since. Baffert has figured this horse out. I think he's best in the Met Mile.
And I think he's best probably at the 1 mile distance, even though he won the Pegasus World Cup and barely held on over Senor Buscador at a mile and an eighth on the short stretch at Gulfstream Park. I don't know what to make of White Iberio either. It's awfully hard to come back with him with any confidence after he laid such an egg in the Saudi Cup. He's done that before in the past. He's thrown in some inexplicably poor races and then bounced back. But the deciding factor to me between these two horses is that I think a mile will be right up the alley of National Treasure. And I think a mile is maybe a little too short for White Iberio.
Good. I get you right there. I am going with Blazing Sevens in here. He's a horse I always love. His comeback visually was very, very good. Now, if you like National Treasure, why aren't you going to like the horse that ran into a head in the Grade 1 Preakness last year? Both of these horses, I believe, want one turn and shorter distances. He's fresh. He's coming in. You're getting Manny Franco, which is fine by me. Won on him last time. And it's Chad Brown. And he's going to latch right on to National Treasure from the get-go. I love Blazing Sevens.
11th race, the last race before the Belmont Stakes, is the Resorts World Casino Manhattan. Grade 1, $1 million purse, of course, on the turf course at a mile and a 3/16. Another just really interesting race. Horses coming from all parts of the world, et cetera. You got a Charlie Appleby, a couple Charlie Applebys in here. Of course, you have Chad Brown in here as well. But I'm going to go with Joseph O'Brien, not Aiden O'Brien, but his son Joseph O'Brien with Al Rifa. And this is a good horse. He ran last time out in a Group 1 at Longchamp, got beat only a half length. Last year as a three-year-old, he is a Group 1 winner, winning the Vincent O'Brien Memorial Stakes at the Cura. Again, this is a race that, you know, anybody trying to play pick fives or pick sixes on this card is going to, you know, you better come with a big bankroll because there's a bunch of races where you need to go seven or eight deep. But Joseph O'Brien brings him in off a very nice race, comes in here. I think that his class from Europe will certainly hold up very well in this spot. Even going against Charlie Appleby, I'll go with Al Rifa.
I don't know where to go in here. I'm going to go after Randy. Go ahead, Randy. Take it away.
All right. Measured Time. Far Outside. Charlie Appleby. William Buick. This is a horse that was beaten just a length and a quarter in the $5 million Dubai Turf last time out on the Dubai World Cup undercard. Ran a good race. Actually had the lead in mid-stretch and just couldn't quite see it out. I know this is a longer spot here. But I think Measured Time is... he's the best horse. I think he's the best horse on paper. He kind of turned the corner a little bit, according to Charlie Appleby. If you're looking at the DRF PPs or the Equibase PPs, after his fourth lifetime start, he ran Kempton, Kempton, Newmarket, Kempton. And it doesn't show in our past performances, but the blinkers came off, theoretically, on the advice of William Buick after that Kempton race on November the 6th. Then he comes back, wins a Group 2, wins a Group 1. And was just beaten in the Dubai Turf. Appleby thinks that made a big difference with the horse. I like 7-2 on the line. I think William Buick had his choice of the two Godolphin horses. I'll take Measured Time, but it's a heck of a race.
Well, you're definitely on the right Godolphin. That is for sure. Drawn on the far outside. I'm going to stick with Chad Brown in here. I like Program Trading. He's 5-2. I believe his odds will drift a little bit. He's a horse who never does anything wrong and seems to run on any ground. He is not ground dependent and flat. Pravian Flavian Pratt knows him like the back of his hand. He's ridden him in all of his starts, bar one. So program trading, but don't discount I'm Very Busy, drawn down on the inside with a rad. Didn't get the best of trips, kind of was bad in the gate last time. And that's kind of a race I'm going to draw a line through as well.
One more little interesting point here. I think I'm on record as saying that even at age 53, I think Frankie Dettori right now is riding better than any jockey in the world. With the exception of his race on Nation's Pride in the Man of War on May 11th at Aqueduct. I don't know what he was doing. He literally sent the horse away from the starting gate, going a mile and 3/8 on the turf. Like a lot of European jockeys have this opinion that when they ride in America, they've got to just go out of the starting gate. And go back and watch that race. The horse was sent. And he rolls up into second behind a 43-1 shot. And Frankie struggled to get him back. He was a little too much on the engine from that point on. It was a good racing surface, officially rated good. But the pace was much faster in that race than the fractions indicate. Flavian Pratt was on Silver Knight. He just fell in right behind Frankie and tracked him all the way around there. And then, blew him away when they came down the lane. And Dettori was 4-5 in that spot. I think he'll be ridden differently without as much sense of urgency leaving the starting gate. So I think Nation's Pride will run an improved race as well.
This week on the TDN Writers Room, we welcome a very new sponsor, and we're lucky to have them. They are the Alameda County Fair. It's live horse racing, and it returns to Alameda County Fair in Pleasanton, California. The meet runs from June the 14th to July the 7th. They will run horse racing every Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, and a bonus card, probably with fireworks to boot, on July the 4th with a post time of 1:45. Horse racing is free to watch with fair admission. There is an awful lot going on at Pleasanton. If you've never been to P-Town, as it is known, you should go and take a look. It is really a lovely country feel. The backside is pristine. You're going to have Brewfest, Winefest, you name it. You can go to the website and check it out. But there is an awful lot going on during June and July in the Alameda County Fair. Get to P-Town, Randy. We should take a road trip to P-Town. I can promise you it'll be better than the road trip you took to Turf Paradise.
Well, if I do get to P-Town, I have an address of the guy that stole my phone in Baltimore. I know exactly where he lives in Pleasanton. So if I get to Pleasanton, I'm coming for you to get my phone back. I tracked it.
Someone stole your phone?
Yeah, well, they stole in quotes. I actually left it on a rental car bus, but he took it and didn't turn it in. He or she took it and didn't turn it in. And I tracked them to the Detroit airport and then to Pleasanton, California. I have the exact
Time I'm in P-Town, I'll be looking for it for you.
Alameda County Fair returns with live horse racing June 14th through July 7th with over $2 million in prize money and 5 stakes races, including the Pleasanton Mile, one of the richest races in Northern California. Buy early and save through June 13th. Scan QR or visit AlamedaCountyFair.com.
With some of the fullest fields in the country and quality racing year-round, there's never been a better time to reap the rewards of breeding and racing in Kentucky. Purse money in Kentucky is at an all-time high, as is average purse per race, outpacing California, Florida, and New York. Kentucky breds. Breed them. Raise them. Race them. We all win.
The TDN Writers Room, also brought to you by Kentucky Breds. And this is also our Epsom Derby segment. Last week, we had Emma Berry on to preview the Epsom Derby and talk about the possibility of City of Troy bouncing back. And boy, did he ever. Coolmore's European champion 2-year-old rebounded from that disappointing 2000 Guineas and stormed to an eye-catching, impressive win in last Saturday's Epsom Derby, also now known as the Betfred Derby. And City of Troy, here's where I'm going with this, became the first Kentucky bred to win the British Classic since Chris Ken did it back in 2003. City of Troy also became the 10th Derby winner, trained by Aidan O'Brien, who said afterward that City of Troy was no doubt the best of those 10 winners. Kentucky breds, breed them, raise them, race them anywhere in the world. we all win.
How impressive was he, Randy?
Oh, man. I thought he was exceptional. Wow.
I mean, how exciting would that be if they brought him to the Travers?
I was a little worried about him early in the race. I was a little bit farther back than I thought he would be, but yeah, no cause for concern, obviously, when he found that seam in the two path about 5/16 of a mile from home.
Did you think perhaps that Rab Havlin on Ambiente Friendly should have just gone when he had the shot? It was like he was waiting and waiting. I don't think it would have made any difference.
I'll trust your judgment on that. I was so locked in on City of Troy from beginning to end. Yeah, I was just watching him to see if he was as good as he was hyped to be, despite the fact that he ran so poorly in the 2000 Guineas. And man, he looked good.
Well, the big news off the racetrack last week was a bombshell. As a matter of fact, it came out of Louisiana, where the Louisiana Racing Commission put out a set of emergency rules that totally rewrote their medication policies, and did so in a way that made it much easier for Louisiana horsemen to use medications, to use them more often, not to have as much withdrawal times. And especially what people were particularly upset about was that you now can allow clenbuterol within 72 hours of a race. The old rule, the ARCI rule in Louisiana, was 14 days. They're going from 14 days to 3 days. They've also brought back a drug that has very controversial called Depomedrol, which is injected into people's joints. Now, sometimes happens on the TDM podcast. We are recording this on Tuesday at 1:38 p.m. Eastern time. At 5 o'clock this afternoon Eastern time, they're going to hold a press conference they're going to have a commission meeting that the press can listen in on. They've gotten a lot of flack, and deservedly so. So we don't know if they're going to change some of these rules, maybe all of them, cut back on some others. But Randy, you know, our sport has made such great strides in making it less about drugs. And then you take a state like Louisiana, who, you know, makes it the wild, wild west. And, you know, it's a very complicated subject. The horsemen don't want it, at least the big guys that come in for the new fairgrounds meet. And, you know, I wonder if it was a little bit of a middle finger to Heise as well, because, you know, because Heise and Louisiana are enemies.
I think you hit the nail squarely on the head right there. Look, I was shocked when I read about this. I'll be even more shocked if the Racing Commission doesn't reverse course. And right now it's Louisiana versus the world, at least the rest of the country. And I was, it was eye-opening to hear guys like Tom Amos and Al Stahl, who are more synonymous with fairgrounds racing than anyone else out there. Two guys born and bred in the state of Louisiana who came out against this and said that it was a bad deal. But I think, look, I mean, the two major racing states in America that are not part of HISA are Louisiana and Texas. And I think that's exactly what this is. I think the people in Louisiana, the horsemen in Louisiana in the commission grouping, are in their cocoon. They're in their anti-HISA bubble. And this is just the middle finger to HISA. It, you know, anything HISA is for, we're against. Anything HISA wants to do, we're for the opposite. HISA wants more regulation, we want less regulation. And I think they greatly overstepped common sense here with these particular draconian rules changes. And like I said, I'll be shocked if they don't do an about face.
It is absolutely bloody ridiculous. I mean, it is like we have gone back 15 years. All the progress that we have made with aftercare, horse care, the pre-vet checks, goes out the bloody window. This is asinine. And when you have people like Stidham, Asmussen, Cherie DeVoe, Brett Calhoun, all of these guys coming forward and simply saying, hey, listen, we compete outside of the state and Louisiana for the rest of the year. We will not be able to compete at the fairgrounds on a level playing field. And that's absolutely true. They won't, because the guys in Louisiana will be able to give their horses God knows what. They'll be able to run them into the ground there, and they'll just be able to keep doing it. And then you got Churchill Downs with their Road to the Derby races. How is that a level playing field? If nothing happens, Churchill needs to step in and make their own house rules. If they can bar Bob Baffert from the Kentucky Derby, they can come in and make their house rules at Louisiana. I think it's
a lot of what. Yeah, a lot of what you just talked about the horses, horsemen coming in from out of town, even if they're there for the whole fairgrounds meeting, kind of revolves in a sense around clenbuterol.
Yeah,
because I mean, we've all seen over the years that clenbuterol, while horsemen will tell you that it does have some legitimate therapeutic uses, it also has such steroidal qualities to mimic anabolic steroids that it was probably the most widely abused drug in thoroughbred racing. Trainers were using it as a performance-enhancing steroid, right? And now they've dialed back all this, and the testing has become so aggressive to make sure that horses do not run with clenbuterol, that it can track clenbuterol in a horse's system going out months and maybe even a year if they test the hair of horses. So now you're going to get these guys like Asmussen and others who run in Kentucky the rest of the year where the clenbuterol rules are very stringent and might run elsewhere, and then ship into the fairgrounds where all the local horsemen in Louisiana, it's been a free-for-all with clenbuterol.
Yeah.
Their horses are all running essentially on anabolic steroids, or at least something that mimics it. So they would be at a huge competitive disadvantage because they can't just all of a sudden shift gears and say, okay, we're going to give our horses clenbuterol again aggressively, because they got to go back out of town again afterward.
And how about the claiming game as well? You're not going to be able to claim a horse from Louisiana.
Yes.
Those races are going to go to pot because you can't claim a horse and bring a horse out of Louisiana. There is no way this is going to hold. There is no way on God's earth. When we come back next week, we're going to be talking about revisions for sure.
Yeah, we may even know about this a little bit later this afternoon. But I'm sure the industry is waiting to see what comes out of the Louisiana Racing Commission today. But, you know, if they wouldn't be holding this meeting if they weren't ready to back off a little bit. I think they were probably, frankly, stunned at the negative impact. I mean, like you said, Randy, TD and I wasn't involved in this, did a great series where they talked to like 10 of the most prominent trainers that race at fairgrounds. Every single one of them, no, this is a terrible idea. This is a terrible idea. There's things that could be done. I was wondering, would Toba, why not take away the graded stakes status from races at fairgrounds? Churchill Downs could make the, give no, and it's kind of a, you know, Churchill Downs is in between a rock and a hard place because they own, the fairgrounds, but how about, you know, just this one time around, no graded stakes points coming out, no Kentucky Derby points or Kentucky Oaks points coming out of their races. There's a lot that can be done. Lisa Lazarus has hinted about a few things that she can do, even though Louisiana is not a HISA state. She can be perhaps put in some rules about what happens when these horses ship out of Louisiana to the HISA states like Kentucky, but it's an absolute mess. I hope that we're talking about next week that, yeah, they did a dumb thing, but they got it right.
Well, it's such an interesting.
Go ahead, Randy.
No, go ahead.
The thing that really made me chuckle in reading some of the comments was the Tom Amos comment where the commissioner or whoever it was said, well, why didn't you say something earlier? And Tom Amos was like, we didn't know. Well, I wish you'd have told us. We'd have done something. We didn't know.
Yeah, it's a very interesting situation. And if those of you who don't know a whole lot about what happened, and this sounds like it's something you might want to read about, you know, Bill and Dan Ross did a fantastic job covering this on TDN. So I encourage you strongly to go read those articles in TDN about this situation. We've just touched on the high point or the low points, if you will. There's a whole lot of meat on this bone, and it's just ridiculous what's been going on down there in Louisiana.
The XBTV Work of the Week is Mystic Dan. Mystic Dan worked 5 furlongs on Saturday at Saratoga in 101.59. That's Mystic Dan on the outside with the septuagenarian, the forever young Danny Ramsey in the saddle. He's working on the outside of Gould's Gold. Gould's Gold, of course, was last second in the Sabarton Stakes. And they pick it up down the lane. This, to me, was a very encouraging work on the outside for Mystic Dan, who, when he first got to Saratoga, I thought he looked a little light, but he sure looks good here. After the work, Kenny McPeak said his blood work came back good. He ate up his feed and was ready to go to the Belmont Stakes. That made him the first horse to compete in all traditional legs of the Triple Crown, not counting COVID, since 2019.
All the thrills, fraction of the bills. Experience the power of the partnership. Change your life, make new friends, and compete at the highest level of thoroughbred racing. West Point Thoroughbreds, the gold standard in racing partnerships. Visit westpointtb.com.
The TD and Riders Room also brought to you by West Point Thoroughbreds, which again visited the winner's circle at Churchill Downs when Cugino stormed to a wire-to-wire 4 1/4 length win in Saturday's Audubon Stakes. That's the first stakes win for Cugino, but the fourth stakes win for West Point at the Churchill Downs meeting. But despite their success at Churchill, West Point considers its home base to be Saratoga, and it will have four runners this weekend at the Belmont Stakes Festival. In chronological order, on Friday, Gal in a Rush goes in the Intercontinental, and on Saturday, West Point sends out Signator in the Suburban, and both Ohana Honor and Cortez in that loaded Manhattan Stakes. To learn more, visit westpointtb.com.
Well, that's a wrap on this week's pre-Belmont TDN Writers Room podcast. I want to thank my partners, Zoe Cadman and Randy Moss, our Green Group guest of the week, Richard Migliori, and our behind-the-scenes people that do such a fabulous job, our producers and editors, Katie Petruniak, Anthony LaRocca, and Aaliyah LaRocca. We'll see you next week, everybody. Happy Belmont Day.